I said, you have to take that story to somebody else, you know, because I'm not going to listen to it. It also says that you have to have women and minorities in the same proportion that they are available in the working force. This particular city official had a female population of 41%. And he said, there is no way that the women in my town, 41% of the women in my town, want to be firefighters. I said, that's not your choice to make. That's their choice to make, you know. And we have to try to just sit there, you know, and just try not to get emotional about it. Because in many of the instances where there are charges and allegations of police brutality and of different things happening, when there are female police officers around, somehow that subsides. And somebody said to me in one of the sessions yesterday that, you know, it's going to take the women of this country to make the difference. And this is why we think that this conference is such an important event. Because if we can make you aware of what the revenue sharing law is about, and if you can go back and monitor it for us, and if you can find women and minorities in your community who are willing to go and apply for these positions, then I don't have to listen to these stories about there are not 41% of the women in my town who want to work, you know. Help us out on that. Yes. Let me explain, yeah, that's a good question, and let me explain the whole process to you, and that'll come into play. Our office is obligated to respond to every complaint that comes in there. I don't care if you take this paper towel here and write it on it and mail it in to us, we have to respond to it. There are no applications to fill out. And Geraldine is sitting there to attest to the fact that very often she is buried in just mountains of complaints, mountains of cases, because we have to investigate every one of them, and we have to do it. And Margaret is one of the civil and human rights investigators, and when she leaves here, she's going on someplace else because she just came from investigating one complaint. She came through here this weekend, and she's due someplace else tomorrow to investigate another complaint. Regardless of how it comes in, we have to investigate it, and we have to do it within a 90-day period. So the process goes like this. We receive the complaint. We send out a letter, and we say to the mayor, we've received an alleged complaint about your city in discrimination. Would you please send us, you know, some documentation? You can try to refute it or do whatever you want to do. And then we wait for that to come back. Then we send out our investigators. And investigators go out, and they talk to the complainant. They talk to the city officials. They gather up all their data, and they bring all the information back to the office, and then they review and analyze all their documentation and put it together, and then they make a recommendation to their supervisor who goes with it to the manager and ultimately brings the recommendation into our office. Now, it is up to the local jurisdiction to show whether or not if the funds, say you applied for the police department and you wanted to be a police officer and somehow they did not hire you and you felt it was because you were a female and you sent this complaint into our office and we went through the process that I have just alluded to. And then it's up to that jurisdiction to show us that none of the money went into, none of our revenue sharing money went into the police department, which is very, very hard to do when most of them take it and put it into their general budget. There was a great deal of talk about fungibility and how when we first talked, the old act said that, you know, they just had to show us what they did with the revenue sharing funds so they could, you know, take all this money and say, well, we're putting it in the fire department, you see, and then we can discriminate all we want to in the police department. So Congress, in its wisdom, said not just revenue sharing funds, but your financial statement. We look at the whole financial statement. The auditors go out, and if they see some semblance of discrimination based on any of those protected classes that we talked about, then they refer it to Margaret, to Geraldine in that office, and they will go out and investigate the non-discrimination provisions of the law. So they have to, the onus is on the city government or the state government to show that none of the monies that went into that police department are revenue sharing monies. It's up to them, you know. Once that money leaves Washington, it is then their money. But in order for them to get that money, they have to sign certain assurance forms to us that they're going to follow the trilogy of compliance that we said. They're going to have the two hearings, they're going to have the audit that we talked about, and they're not going to discriminate on the basis of those protected classes that we talked about. Let me see if I can give you a couple of examples that might help to answer your question. We only fund government, state and local government. Many of the questions that came by the booth as I sat in there were, you know, we've got a women's center. Can we get some revenue sharing money for our women's center, you know, or can we get some money for the library, or can we do this? We only fund government. They are the primary recipient. Now, there are secondary recipients. If you know, the Women's Center might want to go to the state or local government and submit a proposal or ask for money or go to the hearing and become a secondary recipient. But if the primary recipient gives money to a secondary recipient, then the secondary recipient has to abide by the same non-discrimination, the same rules that apply to the primary recipient. We have one case where there was the state gave some money to a county school district who, a female teacher who works for a female principal, asked to have the time off to go to an ERA rally. And the female principal denied the female teacher the opportunity to go. And she filed a discrimination case because men get to go fishing, hunting, you know, all those kinds of things. And the case was, it's been dragging out. We think we've got it resolved. It's 2.5 years old, Geraldine? About 2.5 years old, this one case. But because that school district is a secondary school district, we are dealing with the state. And we say to the state, you may not give any revenue sharing money to that county school district because they are discriminating against women. I don't know if that answers your question. Oh, it gets very specific. It gets very specific. It gets very specific. And I think in answer to that question, if you get down to the county saying that just that school district won't get it, I don't think we go down that low. Because again, you know, we're funding government, you know, entities. And if we go into that county school district and it gets down to an individual principal, you know, that's not a legal body of government. Yes. Yeah. Any other questions? Is Margaret, do you want to say anything? No, it goes right to the jurisdiction, and it's based on population, you know, relative tax effort. And as I said, we take the formula that's in the statute and the amount of money that's in the statute, and by 39,000 units of government, if Podunk has 100,000 people in it, you know, and its relative tax effort was so much, and it goes into the formula, and it comes out that that's how much they get. Right. But whatever the state gets, as we divide it into the 50 states, a third of that goes to the state government, and then the other two-thirds goes into the computer and comes out with how much, if you have 100 jurisdictions, you know, in that state. After you take off the third for the state, then you divide the other 100 up, the other two-thirds up by 100. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, because as I said before, it's an entitlement program, and they send taxes into Washington, and they're entitled to get some of it back. And the formula fixes it so that they do get a nice little healthy taste, because it's based on the population and their relative tax effort. And you may have read not too long ago in the National Enquirer, it was talking about all the wealthy resort towns that receive this money, you know, from revenue sharing. But again, we cannot discriminate against those people in those towns because it is an entitlement program. They are entitled, just like everybody else. Yes, I think she had her hand up first, and then we'll come over to you. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me see. That has to do with our second program. The second program is called the Anti-Recession Fiscal Assistance Program, better known as the Counter-Cyclical Program, and it was to really try to go in and aid financially depressed areas who were suffering from high unemployment rates. And in the first go-round on that one is about, it started in November of 76. In the first go-round on that one, we had the CETA and the non-CETA governments that worked into the formula. But in the renewal that just went through in May of 77, and now we have a fancy new title. The original, it was a part of the Public Works Act. You know, it was Title II of the Public Works Act in 76. But now it has, we called it ARFA before because it was the Anti-Recession Fiscal Assistance Program, so we had a nice acronym, ARFA. As of May of this year, it is now called the Intergovernmental Fiscal Assistance Act, and we haven't figured out an acronym yet, but they took out the CETA components in it because it became then a part of the President's stimulus package that I told you about. So we don't want to sound like we're giving you the runaround, but we no longer deal with the CETA and the non-CETA governments as we did before. Before, we had to go through a whole bit of formula juggling around, and if they had CETA money, you know, what it had to do with the anti-recession. Because the anti-recession is based basically on the amount of unemployment that a community has in excess of 4.5% for a given quarter. Now, each quarter, we give this money out. And we receive the information from BLS, and it's based on the unemployment statistics for that particular quarter. The revenue sharing allocations, the entitlement allocations for revenue sharing, you remember I told you were static. You know, they're in the law. And but CETA, ARFA is not like that. ARFA just juggles back and forth. The law says that we give $125 million plus $30 million for each full one-tenth percent that your jurisdiction goes over 6%, the national. So if, for example, the quarter that we're going to pay on has the national unemployment rate of 7.4%, then we would pay on 7.4%. And it would come out to something like maybe $525 million, you know, because we're taking $125 million plus $30 million for each full one-tenth percent that you are over the 6%. Then we take that and we look at what you get in general revenue sharing money as a part of the formula plus times what your unemployment rate is for your particular jurisdiction. And then that will tell you how much money you would get in the anti-recession money. And that goes on every quarter, which again makes you take your hat off to this less than 200 people that do all this all the time. Oh, yeah, I'm telling you, yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. What's the largest city in the country? And we are really in some very interesting times because, you know, we have requests from some of the border states, you know, Texas, California, New York City, because we said that the revenue sharing was based on what? Population. Yes, combination. But when one of the factors is population, and we're not counting migrant workers, or we're not counting temporary residents, and we're not counting a lot of people, our office catches an awful lot of flack. You have the opportunity, when you check with your local officials, we send out a data card and an estimated allocation, and we send it out along about April or May for the revenue sharing, and we say, here are the statistics that we got from census. Now, it says that your population is this and that your relative tax effort was this, and therefore your estimated revenue sharing is going to be this. Now, you have a challenge period at home. You have a challenge period. If you look at that or your elected officials look at that and you say, in no way is our population that low. And if you send us some documentation during what we call our data improvement program where you can challenge it, you send us the documentation and we send it over to census, and they research it and recheck it, and I'm standing here to tell you that, you know, there have been some errors and that we have had to make some adjustments. We have, out of each entitlement period, we set aside a certain amount of money into our obligated adjustment fund because we know that, you know, computers are only as good as the people operating them, and we know that there are errors sometimes. So when some of the communities challenge the population figures that we use or the tax effort that we use, and we send it over to data, to census, and they send us back a letter and say, they're right. You know, it should have been 600,000 instead of 559,000 people. So then we have to reallocate it, and then we have to take that money out of our adjustment to make up for not sending those people the correct amount of money. Yes. Well, it depends. Margaret, why don't you let one of my technicians who does it all the time. Margaret, do you want to say something about the available workforce and when you go in and do an investigation, exactly how you look at the EEO forms and you have to, do you want to spell out that a little bit more? Oh, why don't I? Okay. Well, we have to gather up all of this data and they can look at it. And we have, Census has, EEOC has, there are all kinds of data available on what the available workforce is in a particular locale. Sometimes we use what's known as the SMSA, the standard, you know about that. Okay, sometimes we use that. Sometimes we use the city. You know, it depends. In some instances, if the radius is not big enough to enclose, we have some cases where there just are no minorities available, and so, you know, we can't hold them accountable for it if they're not there. So we work with other agencies. We look at the statistics, we gather the documentation, and it really is, you know, a lot that's available to us, and our investigators pull all of this together and analyze it and then make a finding and recommendation. Should be all levels. Yes. Oh, excuse me. Oh, I had promised you. That's right. I'm sorry. Then I'll come to you. That would be an excellent suggestion for you to take to your proposed use hearing. You see, you need to take that in and let your local officials know what it is that you want done. Again, we in Washington cannot tell you how to use the money. We can tell you, you know, the federal requirements of non-discrimination and the audit and the public participation, but we cannot tell you specifically what your needs are in your community because we don't really know them. Sure, sure. And see, I think I promised her next, and then you. Well, as I said earlier, it's almost time to start writing your congresspeople anyway to encourage them to renew the legislation. And it never hurts, you know, to have more hands to help do the job, particularly when we have this 90-day time period. From the time we receive your complaint in our office, we've got to have it all resolved and answer back to you in 90 days, you know, which really makes it awful, awful rough on us. But that was before the amendments. See, the amendments just started in January. And that was one of the reasons they put this 90 days in there, so that we wouldn't have any lasting two and a half years anymore, see. And because of that, and I guess I should say that prior to the amendments, there were like, you know, two investigators for 39,000 units of government. So it's no wonder, you know, it took 2.5, 3 years to do a case. We're up now to 50. For 39,000 units of government, but again, now we got two programs that we're administering. So, as I said before, it's a fantastic staff. They do work hard. They're very dedicated, and it's an almost an impossible job to do. But they need your cooperation. We all need your cooperation to help monitor things for us when that money comes into your communities. One final question. Oh, well, they're a part of it. You see, the legislative body, you're at the state level, if you have a budget committee or if the governor has delegated this responsibility to a finance committee or a budget committee, you know, he may have that done there. But the chief executive officer, the mayor, the governor, those are the people who sign the assurance forms, and those are the people that we hold accountable. And so he is responsible for having those public hearings. He or she is responsible for having those public hearings. Oh, absolutely. They got to hear what it is that you want. Now, I said that was the final one, but I think I saw one more. Oh, I'm Bernadine Denning, the director of the Office of Revenue Sharing. And I certainly appreciate your coming. We need your support. Help us with this public awareness program. Write to the office if you need further information. Just send it to Office of Revenue Sharing, Washington, D.C., and we'll get it. And we will do all we can to get you the information that you need, but we want you to enter into this partnership with us so that you will monitor what's going on in your community and keep us informed, because communication is a two-way process. Thank you very much.